I am so excited to be here with you today. As Barry mentioned, he and I have been friends a long time. We go way back, and we have done this gallivanting and traveling, having adventures all over this planet, spreading peace and building bridges, and really blazing a trail of transformation inside and out everywhere we've gone. And Barry has a special distinction in my world. When I get to laughing really hard, I have a tendency to let out these little snorting noises. And I don't do it very often. I'm a pretty serious person, really. And he has the great distinction in my life of being the one who's made me do that the most. He gets me going. And that tuba thing, I can't explain it to you, but that's one of those things that Barry is responsible for. And it is always awesome to watch your friends step out into a larger vision of their dream and fulfilling their purpose on this planet. So to watch Barry and Barbara with Celebration Church has been really, really fun. And so many faces in this community that I'm familiar with. And I just can't wait to see where this community and this ministry goes in the future. It's going to be a terrific journey. The title of my talk today is Lessons in Letting Go. And, you know, it's been really up for me the last couple years, which is one of the reasons I wanted to speak about it. It's also been up for almost everyone in my life in some major way, has been going through all sorts of letting go. And it's been intensifying for me in this last year or so. So letting go is a quintessential part of the human experience. Nobody gets through this life without letting go of lots of things over and over and over again. And our life is literally bookended by letting go. We let go of our mother's womb, and our mother, thankfully, lets go of us so that we can come into this physical expression. And at the other end of our lifetime, we let go of this physical form. We lay it down, and we go on with our soul into our next experience. We let go of people. I've lost a couple of beloved uncles in the last couple years, and many, many good friends, actually. We let go of relationships, jobs, homes, sometimes our health. We have to let go of ways of doing things that stop working, and ideas and thoughts and opinions that no longer serve us. We have to let go of our mistakes, and some of us really struggle with that one. And we have to let go of our grievances and things that have been done to us. And in the work that I do, a lot of it traveling to very difficult places on the planet where so much has gone on, that is one of our hardest things in life, is to let go of what's been done to us and grievances that we have. Now, all of our spiritual traditions, every single one, somehow addresses this concept and this experience of letting go. I believe that letting go is an absolutely essential part of our spiritual training. It's part of what gets us to be the people we were born to be and to fulfill the purpose that we're here to fulfill. So it's like a curriculum. And in Christianity, you know, we're given this awesome promise of a peace that passes all understanding, a peace that goes beyond the stuff of this world and our relationship to it. And I believe letting go is one of the ways that we get there. So we've got a couple phrases that we all hear a lot, you know, this too shall pass. And we most often say that about the struggles and the difficulties and the things we call not good in our lives, but it applies to everything. Everything passes, everything changes, everything transitions. And then the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. That's a biggie because we receive all sorts of things, but we were never designed to take and take and receive and not allow things to pass and let go. So we're admonished in Christianity to build on the rock, to connect to something deeper, our true selves, our true identity, our true connection to our Creator. And we were never meant to get caught up and build on the shifting sands. We're supposed to build on that rock of who we are and that connection that we have to something far greater than ourselves. Letting go really teaches us that the material is just not all there is. In Buddhism, the entire primary principle in Buddhism is about non-attachment and the impermanence of all things, and that our suffering in life is caused completely by our grasping and clinging and holding on to things. And the path in Buddhism is to practice over and over again, letting go and recognizing that everything is impermanent, and that is how we attain liberation in Buddhism. Now, in Hinduism, there's a Sanskrit word, maya, which basically means illusion. It's the way that we, from our normal, everyday human consciousness, get caught up in the stuff of the world, and we forget who we really are, and we become very involved in what's going on here, and we just totally get disconnected from what we're actually here to do and be about. So in Hinduism, the path is about lifting the veil of the Maya and re-experiencing and discovering the Brahman within, the cosmic self that's connected to God. So all spiritual traditions in some way address this, and nature teaches us a lot about letting go. Nature shows us through the seasons and the leaves falling from the trees, and Barry was talking about the breath. You know, you can't breathe in if you refuse to breathe out. The way that we eat, you know, we don't keep it all in there. There'd be a big problem if we did. We were never meant to cling and hold on. I spend a lot of time, about 2 months a year, in the Middle East. As Barry was talking about, that's one of my passion places on the planet. And there's a sea, the Dead Sea, that falls between Israel and Jordan. And the Dead Sea is dead. It's got a very high salt content and a very high mineral content, but nothing lives there. There are no fish, there are no plants, it's dead. And one of the reasons that it's dead is that water flows into it from the Jordan River and rain falls into it, but there are no outflows. There are no rivers or streams that carry water away from the Dead Sea. So everything stays there, which is why it has these salt and mineral contents, but nothing can live there. So nature reminds us of this, and yet we struggle with it, and we don't want to do it, and we resist. We hold on. We get caught up in this illusion. We're afraid to change. We're afraid to make mistakes. We're afraid to fall, and so we hold on. We seek stability, and we think that that's going to come from the stuff of this outer world. And sometimes what I think it is we really think we know best what we need, what we want, what's going to work, and we forget that there's this higher truth that's trying to come through us if we'll just step out of the way. So we either let go when we know we need to and we can see we need to, or sometimes we get that spiritual 2x4 upside the head because we won't do it. And I think it's such an important part of life, and that I'm all about trying to avoid getting that spiritual 2x4 upside my head. I've had it a lot. So I wanted to explore some of the aspects of letting go and how we can bring more awareness into that process and maybe have a more gentle relationship with that process in our lives. So as I said, it's been really up for me the last couple years, especially this last year. A couple of people have passed away, and I've been putting it this way to my friends. I've had sort of a mass exodus of people from my life in the last few years. It's been really interesting. You know how we get seasons in our life sometimes? And one of my ministers that I like to listen to, she says, God's dealing with me about something. Well, I've been getting the letting go, especially in the area of relationship. And I have to back up and say that I set goals every year. I was here last week and heard Larry Dennis talking about the goal-setting workshop that was done here. And I use Jack Bolin's Mastermind Goal Achievers Journals. For about 20 years, I've been setting goals. And if you don't do that, I'm making a plug now. It is a life-transformative experience to set your goals on paper every year. So for the last couple of years, one of my goals has been to release relationships and forms of relationships that no longer serve my highest good. Okay? A couple years. It's very interesting how I thought I knew what that was going to look like. No way. So some of these endings and some of these changes in relationship were obvious to me. I knew I'd been in certain situations that really weren't the best situations for me to be in friendships. And I could see the problems, the unhealthiness, the imbalances, some codependency, some negativity, and yet I stayed year after year. And, you know, we'll work around things for so long when we know there's something right there that we need to take a look at. And I love this story about the farmer who's got a big rock in the middle of his field. And year after year, he plows this field and he goes around this rock because he thinks it's going to be such a pain to remove the rock. He just keeps doing it year after year. And he breaks off the plow blades and he breaks his disc. And, you know, he just is having all this expense and inconvenience and frustration. And so finally one year he says, okay, I got to deal with this rock. So he goes to start to work on it, and he finds that it only goes about 6 inches into the soil. it looks big and mean on top, but it really isn't what he thought it was. And in fact, when he starts to bust, you know, work on it, it starts to bust up and just dissolve. So, you know, God needs us to deal with our rocks and look at them and be willing to let them go, because they're just causing us unnecessary frustration and they're keeping us from who we can be. So these, you know, letting go of these friendships was still not easy. There was a process there. There was grief because these people, I still love them. But there's also the process of recognizing that something is draining your energy and taking your life away from you. Now, we get to the other side of this, which is the ones I didn't expect. I really thought I knew who I was going to be letting go of. And a couple of these that ended up happening were just big shocks, including like a 20-year-long friendship that was ended not by my choice, but by someone else who stopped talking to me completely. Big surprise. You know, a lot of confusion and frustration and pain, right? And I probably would have never let go of that relationship, and there's been a couple others. I probably never would have done it myself because of what I thought I had. But Spirit saw stuff that I didn't see. And it took getting away from those situations to actually begin to go, wow, I had no idea what part of me was being harmed and used up in a bad way in that relationship. When we're really close to something, you know, we can't see it. And so Spirit just took these things away. And when I got a little distance, I suddenly realized I was feeling better and I had more energy. And there were a lot of really positive changes that came from the removal and the forced letting go. So I was really surprised at how much better I felt after all of these changes, even though that it still was an adjustment and all of them have had their own process, but it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be, just like the rock. And, you know, having those things illuminated that I couldn't see was really a gift. Now, it is scary to have so many people leave your life all at one time, either people who've died or people who I've chosen to distance myself, or they have walked away. It's a little scary. It's a bit like the guy on the tightrope and, you know, holding on and not knowing what's going to happen if he lets go and he falls and having no idea what's coming next. And I always think of it as setting sail on the ocean, and you have to let go of the shore that you're leaving. And sometimes you get out there in that void and you can't see anything. Sometimes there's fog and you can't see another shore. You don't even know if there is another shore. And you just have to keep going. And I think that building up a tolerance for being in that void is part of what the spiritual path is all about. Because we can't get to where we need to get to by sitting on the shore going, wouldn't it be nice to take a cruise? We can't get there that way. So I love to try to figure out ways to learn how to relax in that void. And I've had a lot of practice in this last couple years. And new people are showing up in my life. That's the good news. And what's amazing is that the relationships and the quality of the friendships that I'm cultivating are so different. And they're calling me higher. And it's just an extremely wonderful experience. And I'm grateful that it's finally starting to happen, because I was sort of out there by myself for quite a while. Okay, now, I have to tell you about something really, really important that I had to let go of this last year. How many of you know what a Mexi-Fry is? Okay, it's got a couple aliases. The Tater Tot, or the Spud Puppy, that's another one. Yeah, okay. I have had a long and intimate relationship with the Mexi-Fry. It's basically, for any of you who don't know yet what it is, it's a little cylinder of ground-up potato that gets deep-fried. And they live at a place called Taco Time, which is one of my favorite restaurants. And I've been eating these things my whole life, and they're my comfort food. It's what I reach for when I'm sad or when I've had a hard day. And even when I was in therapy, I used to go before or after every single, you know, Mexi-Fry's before, sometimes both, before and after. So going back to my goal setting, back at the beginning of 2007, I just decided I'm going to make it a year without Mexi-Fries. No Mexi-Fries. And, you know, I'd been working on my health and improving my health and getting more fit and stuff, so it was in alignment with those other goals. And there was also part of me that just recognized, you know, I have this really unhealthy attachment to this thing, right? And I don't like to have those, so I'm going to just take it on. So Those first few visits to Taco Time in early 2007 were excruciating. I could see the Mexi fries, I could smell the Mexi fries, I could taste the Mexi fries, I could imagine, you know, ordering the Mexi fries. And it was really, really hard. I've got one good friend who shares my addiction to these things, and we talk about how we would be going to the drive-thru, and everything in my mind, you know, would be, this is before 2007, would be like, okay, I'm just getting an iced tea. All I'm getting is an iced tea. That's all I'm getting. No Mexi fries. Iced tea, iced tea, iced tea. You drive up, can I help you? Yeah, an order of Mexi fries and an iced tea. It just come out. So this is a deep, deep addiction for me here. So I made it through the whole first month, and on January 31st last year, I was all day going, 1/12th of the year, I made it with no Mexi fries, I'm so proud of myself. I was just so happy. And I went into Taco Time to get my dinner, and I ordered my veggie soft taco and my iced tea. And I sat down in the back booth, and the kid brings the tray, and he shoves it on the table, and he runs away really quick, and I look down. What do you think is on my tray? The most perfectly cooked. Sometimes they're not good, you know, but these were perfect. They were steaming hot, fresh, you know. The little carton was peeking open, and I could just see them, and I thought, oh, no. So I'm looking at them, and the first thing that comes is, they're going to throw them away. If I take them, I don't waste food, you know. I just don't do that. They're going to throw them away. If I give them back, they've been on a tray. They can't give them to somebody else. You know, I can't waste this food. Okay, I can see I'm rationalizing, so I pause, and I think, okay, well, you know, it's the last day of the month. I could start tomorrow. February 1st to February 1st, a year without Mexi fries. How about that? No one would know, just me. So I sat there, and I looked at them, and I finally knew what I had to do. So I picked them up, and I go up to the counter. Now, why I didn't just throw them away, because that's what they were going to do, I don't know. But I had to confess to the manager of Taco Time. So I take them up, and I say, you know, I need to give these back to you. I didn't order them. And the gal says, you know, well, that's okay. That was our mistake. You know, keep them. Enjoy them. I would really like to do that. You don't know how much I want to eat these, but I really can't. I've sworn off them for the whole year, and I got to give them back to you. She's like, okay. And there's this guy, very nicely dressed guy in a business suit next to me getting ready to order, and he looks at me and he's like, I'm impressed. He's like, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have given them back. So I was pretty sure I was going to make it at that point. But the dark days were not over. It continued, and every time I went in there, I was just like ultra aware of, like, look at that healthy person. They're eating Mexi fries. And look at that skinny, beautiful woman. She's eating Mexi fries. You know, why can't I have Mexi fries? So then, that, you know, that was my first temptation, them appearing on my tray. Then the summertime, you know, the battle's still kind of going on. They did a promotion where they were putting these little coupons on the side of the cups, the drink cups. Three times, free Mexi fries. And I had to turn those over to my personal trainer because I couldn't be trusted to keep them with me. So, you know, this struggle just goes on. And then something really wild happened. About in the fall sometime, I forgot about Mexi fries. I simply forgot about them. And it was no longer a struggle not to order them. I would get in the restaurant and order my stuff and be really happy with it, and I wasn't even thinking about them. And when the end of the year came, I just realized that the craving was completely gone. Just gone. No struggle. No rules anymore. I didn't want them anymore. And I can have them now if I want them, and I still haven't had them because it hasn't been something that I wanted. So I triumphed over the Mexi fries. But you know, it's a great example of how deeply embedded some things become in us, habits and addictions, and that when we continually focus on them or expose ourselves to them or eat them in this case, it keeps them alive in us. You know, a rejection, a disappointment, a mistake, we keep going over and over and over it. Or we just keep exposing ourselves to this thing that we're trying to let go of. Once I got it out of my system, like literally out of my system, it just ceased to be a struggle. It's even generalized out. I don't even really want French fries anymore, which is like a miracle. So no struggle, no rigid rules. I just don't want them anymore. And that's what happens when we finally can get to that place in the process of letting go. We have to know that when we give up something or we're trying to let go of something, that temptation will come. it will come, always, even in something as simple as this, you know, that was just an amazing thing for them to show up there, ready to be eaten, looking at me. And I'm a counselor, too. I work with people on all different kinds of problems, and there's an analogy that I like to use about working on giving up something, a habit, or working with an addiction, and it has to do with rolling a giant boulder, like up a hill, and it never ceases to amaze me how people get almost to that critical place where if you just go just a little bit more, the thing is over, and it's rolling on the other side, and we're done. But people get to just that place, and it's so hard, and there's such a struggle, and they've worked so long, and they're tired, and they drop it, and it rolls back down part or sometimes, you know, more than part of the way, and we have to start again. So that's just, there's that critical moment where we can just keep the energy pushing, and we can make it through. So as I said, I set this goal partially as a spiritual practice. It was a spiritual goal to let go of something that I knew I was unhealthily connected to. And I think that's a really important thing that we can do. I learned that Mexi fries are not the source of my happiness. You know, I'm still pretty happy. And when we have success in letting go of smaller things, it really builds in us the capacity to meet those bigger things that come along that we have to let go of. It's like spiritual weightlifting. We build the letting go muscles so that when we absolutely have to let go, we know how to do that in less struggle. I have a sign on my desk in my office that says, "Most things are difficult before they are easy." And I think sometimes we expect things, you know, if I'm supposed to do this, it's going to be easy. And that's just not the way it works most of the time. The good news is we can get better at letting go. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about someone in my life who's taught me a lot about letting go, who's a total inspiration. And she's really a master of letting go. And her name is Lucy. And Lucy was my childhood neighbor when I was growing up. She lived right next door to us. And a role model, mentor, friend. She was like a grandmother to me. And I've known her since I was born, basically. And she's turning 103 this coming summer. She's quite a lady. Independent and courageous. She would go around saying, you know, "I don't take no guff from nobody." And she's had so many challenges in her life. Going back, you know, I could list so many, but just being married to the love of her life, having three children, three girls, and then he's killed in an accident, and she basically has to raise these kids on her own. And then she married another guy that, we won't go into that story, but she ended up getting rid of him pretty quick. Divorcing, that is. Be clear. And she had very little education. She worked many years as a Safeway checker, which she absolutely loved doing, and she was forced to retire at 65. She didn't want to quit, but they made her lay that down. And you know, Lucy has taken every loss and every change in her life in stride. She's what I call hardy. You know, she just, nothing ever gets her down. So I got to spend a lot of time with her when I was growing up. Even as a very young child, I would go to her house every night for tea. And I owe a lot of who I am as a person to this woman because she was such a remarkable role model and influence on me. And I got the great honor to attend her 100th birthday party a couple years ago down in California where she's living now and had some extra time to spend with her talking. And she got to tell me about her recent life because I haven't been as close to her and some of the things she's had to let go of. And I wanted to share some of those things and how she did it because it's truly masterful. So the first big one was letting go of driving. And Lucy was always on the move. She was always going. And she had this 1960-something baby blue Valiant, right? It was really wild. And she was always going. And she had that car as long as I knew her. She had that car. And this was a huge loss to her. But here's the really amazing part. She made that decision herself. I know a lot of older folks that it's just a hard thing to give up, and it's been a real struggle. But Lucy was telling me, she said, you know, one day I was out driving around, and I just realized, you know, my eyes aren't working the way they used to. And my response times are getting a little slower. She's like, I don't want to hurt anybody, and I certainly don't want to hurt myself, so it's time to stop. So she just laid it down with grace and dignity. No denial, no, you know, trying to avoid it. She made the choice herself. She didn't wait for the spiritual 2x4, and she just laid it down. And the next big letting go that Lucy had to do was going from independent living on her own, moving into a retirement home, which is also a transition that's really tough for a lot of people. But Lucy focused completely on what she was moving towards and what she was gaining rather than on what she was letting go of. And she said, you know, I was starting to have to rely on my family and my friends to take me places because I couldn't get there on my own. She's like, this place, everything's right there. They bring the bank to us. You know, there's a little grocery store. I can buy my candy bars. You know, she focused on the fact that she was going to be able to preserve more of her independence rather than losing independence. This was a way she could stay self-reliant the way that she had always been. All right, then we're up to her having to let go of taking her walks outside. Now, this is really incredible. She is the oldest resident in that place that she lives, the retirement community. And Lucy does laps around the retirement community every day, three times a day, three times around this big complex, every day. She's inspired like almost everybody in that nursing home and in the retirement part of the community to exercise and do what they can do from wherever they're sitting. And one day she said she was outside walking around, and she was walking on the sidewalk around the retirement grounds, and she said, I just got to thinking that it would really hurt if I fell down on that pavement. I would lose a lot of skin. She's like, I didn't want to do that anymore. So she said, I just decided to take it inside. She's like, falling on the carpet, I'd keep more of my skin. So no excuses. She didn't stop exercising. She knew that that was something she wanted to keep doing. And so she just moved it inside. She's actually affecting more people that way now. More people see her. And then finally, her last letting go was letting go of walking unassisted, meaning without a walker. And her family bought her a walker, and they were kind of pushing her, you know, Mom, we think you need the walker. Please start using it. She's like, I'll let you know when I need the walker. Nobody tells her what to do. But you know what? The day came. She felt like she needed the extra support, and she didn't hesitate to embrace the walker. It was time. And this is the remarkable part of this story. She still takes her laps with the walker every day, three times. But she took on a new mission when she started walking with the walker. She said, you know, I got to looking around this place, and nobody knows how to use their walker right. She's like, all these kids in their 70s and their 80s, they're all hunched over. You know, they're not standing up straight. She's like, that's terrible for your posture. Their walkers aren't adjusted right. They're not using them right. She's like, so I decided I'm going to teach everybody in this house how to walk properly with their walker so they can keep their posture good. So she, you know, she says, you have to get it adjusted right, and you get real close to it, and you stand up straight, and you walk. So, you know, in her letting go, I mean, that's another hard transition for many, many people. And she found a way to find meaning and purpose in that letting go and to be of service to all the kids, the 70 and 80-year-olds. She found a way to be of service in finding that she has to embrace this new thing and let go of something precious to her. She found a way to be of service and help other people live a better life. And that's just the way she's done everything her whole life. Each time she's had to let go of something, she lets go of what was, she embraces what is, and she reaches for the next possibility. And that's a great formula for living. I believe that life becomes much easier when we stop resisting the inevitable process of letting go. We all have to let go over and over and over again of so many things. And as we develop more awareness and some skills around how to do that, we can live life with a lot less pain and in a lot more peace. So you may be facing something this very day that you need to let go of, and you know you need to let go of it. Or you may be being forced to let go of something that you don't want to let go of. Whatever it is, I hope that you can infuse that process with a little bit of a different perspective and a little bit more awareness as you work through it. And, you know, I'm a big believer in practicing things to grow those muscles. And practice is what allows us to go through things with more ease. Jody last week in her talk showed the slides of the monks that travel with the Dalai Lama. And I was very touched by the story of them making their mandalas out of the sand that they blow into these beautiful, the intricate designs with all the colors, and hours of labor and love go into those things. And when they're ready to move to the next town, they just sweep it up and take it with them. It's gone, as a reminder that all things are impermanent. It's a practice. That's a spiritual practice that they do to remind themselves that even though this thing is incredibly beautiful, it's just this thing. and they can let it go. And my sort of version of that, I've done this since I was a little kid, and I love to do it whenever I'm around children. I like to build little miniature worlds outside, in the forest, if I'm hiking, or at the beach, with just things you find, natural things, and I'll pick a theme like a luau or a camping trip or whatever, and then just find little things that represent little things. I've done this all my life. And I was at the beach once with a friend and her two kids and two other kids from the neighborhood. So I had 2 5-year-olds and 2 8-year-olds with me. And the moms were off doing their thing, and I was with kids. And I suggested we build this miniature world. And I think we picked the luau because we had something that looked like a good pig that we could put in a pit for roasting. So we were making we had a moat, and we had, you know, the little campfire, and we had all these things that the kids were putting together, and it was very elaborate. And, you know, as it happens, the tide started to come in, and the water was getting closer to us, and the first wave, you know, hit this thing. And these 5-year-olds and these 8-year-olds, I thought I was going to have a big problem. They started to get really upset. Oh, no, we got to stop the water. And I was like, uh-oh, we have to do something about this because the inevitable is coming. And I said, well, you know, wow, that wave almost took out the little tower there. And I'm like, how many waves do you think it'll take to take that tower completely out? So then they started trying to figure out, like, how many waves is it going to take before this is gone and before that's gone and before the whole thing, you know, can't be seen. And it turned into a whole new experience for them. And that was also joyful. And they were able to let it go. So I encourage you to pick something physical, something in your world that you can let go of, that is symbolic to you of your willingness to let go of what you need to let go of in your life. So you can find your Mexi Fry. You all have at least one, I'm sure of it. Or you can clean out a closet or a drawer, anything that basically says to the universe, you know, I'm ready to let go of what needs to be let go of, what I no longer need, what no longer serves me, so that we can practice building those muscles and cultivating that ability to let go. In my counseling, one of the stories I also like to tell is that, you know, the time to weave your parachute is not when you're like halfway out the plane with your foot on the strut and you're about to make the skydive. Really bad time to think about weaving your parachute. We really want to be doing that proactively to have that parachute ready when we need it. So let's remember Lucy's graceful and dignified example of the benefits of cultivating this over a lifetime, like she's done. We can all live the way that she does. We simply need to let go of what was and embrace what is and reach for the next possibility. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nola. So it's our offering time now, and what a wonderful time to